And tonight we're very fortunate to have someone with us that I really not only love but admire a great deal. She is one of our very own national marketing directors, Dr. Valerie Miles. And let me tell you just a little bit about Dr. Miles. She's a national marketing director, as I said, but she graduated magna cum laude from Simpson University in 1987 with a BS in zoology, and went on to receive her MD degree from the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston in 1991. Since 2004, Dr. Miles has been recommending Juice Plus to her patients, following in the footsteps of her mentor, Dr. William Sears. Although Dr. Sears' endorsement of the whole food concentrate first caught her interest, it was the multiple gold standard third-party research articles published in peer-reviewed journals that solidified her confidence in Juice Plus. After several years of recommending Juice Plus to her patients, Dr. Miles sees less sick and more well children in her clinic, in line with her keeping kids healthy philosophy. In addition, she values the vehicle of education within that NSA, the maker of Juice Plus, provides her as she speaks on the topic of nutritional education nationwide. And she's certainly been quite an admired spokesperson for us as well. I think it was The Balancing Act, right, that you appeared on that television show talking about Juice Plus and the power it affords everyone, and especially children. So, Dr. Miles, maybe you can share with people a little more about yourself and then the topics that you had for us tonight that everyone is so excited to hear about.
Well, I'd love to, and thank you for that introduction, Cheryl. I'm really excited always to hear where everyone is from, and it's so excited that people are staying up late around the world to listen, because I really have this heart for sharing on this topic and many other topics that affect children and families, and so I'm just really pleased to have the privilege, so thank you. And, you know, my training was in a great medical center in Salt Lake City, wonderful children's hospital there, and we got great training in modern medicine. You know, we come out of our training very well-versed in how to diagnose and prescribe medications and surgeries and really not miss any serious medical problems. But when we come out of training, we don't have as much training in how to keep people well. And that's why I love that sort of keeping kids healthy philosophy. I wasn't trained with that, but once I came out into the world and began practicing, I really found that that was missing. And so I trained myself, like many of us do, really to learn how to really be powerful in that, teaching families how to keep their children healthy and keep themselves healthy. So I was able, when I moved from Colorado, where my first practice was, and I learned from my parents many different things about, you know, kind of introducing me to different topics that were outside the scope of just what we learned in the medical training. I studied those and researched those and was able to get certification in holistic medicine so I could really have a credential that backed up that scientific learning that I had done. And really, I became an integrative physician. And now there's many of us around the country, many, many, many of us around the country that are practicing this way, really blending kind of the best of both worlds, the best of modern medicine and the best of many traditions of medicine, so we can really take the best care of our patients, so we can really focus on wellness and prevention. And I feel like this is the only way we are going to repair healthcare in this country anyway, is to really focus on wellness and prevention. So I'm happy to share what I've learned about the topics of ADHD and autism and what works in my practice that I have now, which is 12 years old now. I have a primary care practice in Jacksonville, Florida, where we practice integrative medicine, but in taking care of children like a regular pediatric practice does. So we have been very successful, and we're bursting at the seams, always have a waiting list for new patients, and I think that just shows how much need there is for this kind of discussion. So I'm really excited. More people can listen and learn, the better the children, the healthier the children are. So I, you know, when I first came into practice back in Colorado in the mid-90s, what I had learned in my training to do for ADHD was to write prescriptions for medications. That was it. And also to make sure that the kids got into counseling and the families got counseling so they would know how to deal with the behavior problems that they often had. And what I knew to do for autism was pretty much next to nothing because I had only seen one handful of children, maybe five at the most, in all my 4 years of training. And remember, that was back in the early 90s. Things have changed a great deal with autism since then. Now in my practice, we see many children with both attention deficit and autism every week. And we have an approach that we've come up with that really results in many children with attention deficit needing very little or no medication in some cases, and an approach that really can result in dramatic improvements for many children with autism. So my intention for this call is really that everyone will have a good understanding of what ADHD and autism are, what the causes and contributors are, and how we can help improve the symptoms of ADHD and autism, and how Juice Plus may make a difference and fit in the lives of these children with these conditions to help them get better. So what are ADHD and autism? Well, both of them are common and very complex neurodevelopmental conditions, and both are much more common in boys than girls, as many people might know. Some think that ADHD is actually the mildest form on the autism spectrum. There's controversy about that, but there are many similarities in these children. In fact, a 2010 study in the European Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry found that 20 to 50% of children with attention deficit meet the criteria for autism spectrum disorder, and 30 to 80% of autism spectrum disorder children meet the criteria for attention deficit. So there's a lot of overlap there, and I think that's because there are many biochemical similarities that are happening in these kids' brains. And that's good because this ends up being an approach, as I'm going to talk about, that works for both and works for many conditions, in fact, with the brain. So attention deficit is the most commonly diagnosed psychiatric condition in childhood. That's why we hear about it so much. It's what's called a disruptive behavior disorder. And what we see is a kind of a set of chronic behavior patterns that really impair the children. And these kids display abnormal levels of attention, hyperactivity, or the combination of the two. And it really should be diagnosed in order to be classic right-on ADHD. It should be diagnosed before the children turn 7 years old. And so what we find is 2 to 3 times more common in boys. And we used to just say boys will be boys, you know, and now we've got this, you know, this set of behaviors that we've really identified that we can diagnose. And sometimes it's just attention deficit and sometimes it's other things. But as we know now, and many of you guys know out there, that this can continue on into adulthood for a significant percentage of these children. So it's really great to be a pediatrician and be able to impact somebody's whole life by helping them this early on. The incidence of attention deficit is really different around the world, and it can even be very different from state to state in our country and even different from county to county in the same state. So there's a wide variety. What we find is about 5 to 10%. The highest incidence in the world is 5 to 10%, and that's Europe and the United States. The statistics from 2010 show that 11% of boys in the United States are diagnosed with attention deficit, 5.5% of girls, and Colorado's the lowest and Alabama's the highest. So I find that interesting because you can also see on the obesity scale that Colorado is one of the lowest states and Alabama's one of the highest. So there's, I'll tie that back together a little bit later. The number of office visits for ADHD has increased 66% over the last decade from 2000 to 2010. And the number of prescriptions written for ADHD has increased significantly, 50% over the same time period. What they say about that is there's just better medications now. There's better medication options. But I think a lot more kids are getting medication than actually may need changing from medication to medication. So I think the problem with medication is that if you can avoid any kind of medication, of course you would want to, because side effects, particularly in the case of these stimulants that we use, can be really significant. They can increase blood pressure, suppress the appetite, cause emotional changes. They can cause muscle tics and even Tourette's syndrome to appear. And, of course, there can also be growth suppression if the kids aren't eating. So that all said, there are some great strengths within children and adults with ADHD. I mean, they often grow up to be extremely successful. But sitting still and paying attention and exploring boring classroom is not one of their strengths. So, you know, there's wonderful things about it, and so we want to build up on those strengths. Now, autism, the definition of autism spectrum disorder is it's a spectrum from mild to severe of bio-neurological developmental disability. So it's both biological and brain neurological, and it really impacts the normal development of these children in three areas: social interactions, communication, and mental function. And they often have, as folks may have seen, repetitive behaviors like flapping hands and things like that that you can notice that are typical. It's 4 to 5 times more common in boys, and 4 times more common in children who are born prematurely, very interestingly. And there is some fascinating new evidence over the last couple of years that you can even find a video on TED.com about this. But as young as 6 months old, there's some PhD researchers that have found they can diagnose, they can predict who is going to be autistic with 80% accuracy at 6 months old, based on how the children, the babies are tracking. So they have a screen that they can track what they're looking at, whether the babies are looking at objects or people in a scene. And, of course, that social interaction you can see really early on. So we're working with that now to see if we can really have some really early intervention. So that's very exciting. The incidence of autism, as most people know, is really skyrocketing. It's very scary to be a pediatrician right now and not know when this is going to end. But 20 years ago, which is when I first came into practice, the incidence was 1 in 5,000. That's 0.02%. In 2006, it had jumped to 1 in 110, which is, of course, almost 1%, from 0.02% to 1%. The latest statistics are from 2008. The incidence is 1 in 88 children are on the autism spectrum disorder scale, 1 in 54 boys. Basically, nearly 2% of the boys in this country are diagnosed with autism spectrum. It's a staggering statistic. And so the increase really over the last, mainly the last, I would say, 10 to 15 years is where it's become kind of exponential. There's controversy about whether we're just diagnosing it better or it's really a real epidemic. And I think it's probably a little of both, but I can tell you because early in my practice, in the mid-90s, I just didn't see this, and I see it week in and week out now with the autism spectrum. The cost of having 1 in 88 children in the United States diagnosed with autism, needing services, needing therapies, needing extra care, in a lot of cases, 50% at least are not going to be able to go to college or function in a job situation. So these costs will get higher, but right now the cost is $137 billion per year, and I think that's an underestimate. But again, there's also great strengths in autistic children. I find they are extremely intelligent, extremely curious about the world, great with figuring out how things work. Once we kind of lift this fog and help them improve, you can really see these amazing strengths. Almost every parent of a child with autism will say they know they're brilliant. They know they're in there. So our goal is always just to lift this curtain kind of with autism, and really the same thing with attention deficit. And in both of these diagnoses, you know, we see problems with lots of different things, with sleep problems, sensitivities to food and artificial ingredients, problems with discipline, problems with behavior, and a lot of allergies, just to name a few. There's a lot more going on, but these are kind of the primary things. So let's look at causes and contributors. And let me just say that the causes of ADHD and autism are really nowhere near being figured out yet, although there's a lot of research going on. And no matter what the causes are, really having a child with attention deficit or autism is really an extremely stressful situation for the family. So it almost doesn't matter what the cause is, it's just can we improve what's contributing to making it worse. So that's really what we want to focus on, and we do in our practice, focus on eliminating the factors that can contribute to the problem, and we really move forward with testing and therapies and lots of dietary changes and things I'll mention that can theory with autism called the triple hit hypothesis, and this may be true for a lot of conditions. Three things have to occur with the triple hit hypothesis. There's a developmental time window where the fetus in utero or the child is really vulnerable. They have to have this genetic susceptibility, and they have to have an environmental stress. That's sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back. They have to. They believe that it's all three of those things that have to exist in one time period to cause one of these autism spectrum disorders to happen. And that makes a lot of sense, since there's no way to really have, there isn't a possibility of having a genetic epidemic. We are absolutely seeing an epidemic with autism, in my opinion and many pediatricians' opinions, because we see so many more children with autism now. And there's no way that genes do that. Genes change very slowly over time. But what's come up is sort of like, I think of it kind of like the canaries in the coal mine. As our environmental stressors and our oxidative stress gets worse with how our world is changing, that takes those folks that have the genetic susceptibilities to have a problem with that, and they're the first ones that get affected, just like the canaries in the coal mine. And so it's really important to figure this out now so that we can stop whatever is contributing. So if you look at genetics and attention deficit, you'll find at least 25% of kids with attention deficit have a close relative with attention deficit. So mom or dad, or even an aunt or uncle, you always find some, or it seems like we always find someone that's got that tendency. And there's a lot of research ongoing. I can go on and on about different kinds of genes, but over the last few years, there's gene sequences that have been identified that are associated with ADHD. And just in 2012 alone, so far, there have been 16 new studies published on genetics and attention deficit. So a lot is coming out about that. We don't think we can change the genes we inherit, except we are learning that we can turn genes on and turn genes off. So that's exciting. We want to look at those switches and see how we can, even if you inherit something, how we can maybe switch that bad gene off. And then with autism, massive amounts of research are going on with genetics. And just like attention deficit, there's no one gene that is the cause. You know, really, after over 10, 15 years of searching, researchers would have found that one gene by now, right? What the focus is on is what they call SNPs. And these are tiny little deletions or changes affecting a little, just tiniest little part of a gene, a part of the DNA. And that can affect a wide variety of genes and a wide variety of processes in the body and the brain. And these SNPs all together are most likely what causes tendency or predisposition toward developing autism. And what we've already found hundreds, over 200 of these that are associated with autism, and they think that number actually might be double before they're done. So just say there might be 500 of these little SNPs, and that's why every child with autism is different, because they've all inherited a different set of these little SNPs. And even though there's this background of SNPs and genetic tendency, many researchers believe that there must be a trigger, like I said, a developmental window and an environmental stress. If you look at recent research out of Canada and Australia, there's actually researchers that have shown that if you look at groups of these SNPs, they can predict whether a sibling of a child with autism will have autism themselves with about 70 to 85% of accuracy. So they're getting closer. And really interesting to me is that there's identical twins where only 90% chance that the identical twin will have autism. So most of the time they both have autism, but I'm wondering about the 10%. What's going on there? Why did the 10% of identical twins get protected? One got protected. What is there a protective set of genes is the question. So I'm hoping they're looking at that as well. But really, we know genetics is only a part of the answer. Genes only account for about 20 to 30% of the cause of most illnesses. And so this certainly fits with kind of the triple hit hypothesis that you have to have other things. So let's look at environmental stress. Really, I could spend hours talking about environmental stressors, but I'll just focus on two areas, toxins and the diet, because they have the most impact and the most research on attention deficit and autism. If you look at toxins, we know that prenatal exposure to certain medications and certain infections will increase the chance a baby will develop autism. The number of toxins, if you look in umbilical cord blood and breast milk, is absolutely staggering. There are many pesticides and chemicals that will be in these body fluids. Things like DDT, which is a pesticide that's been banned for years and years, and it still exists in our environment. And even though these were banned a long time ago, you know, they stay in the soil and they stay in the plants and they stay in the water, and that just keeps getting recycled. If you look at pesticides specifically, there's a lot of good research with attention deficit that shows pesticides and ADHD are linked. And if you can get the levels down in the children's urine and blood, you can improve their ADHD symptoms. And a lot of times they found these things in the blood and urine of children who had no specific reason to have these big major pesticides. They didn't live near a farm or didn't have any environmental exposure that they could figure out. And then there's also lead and mercury and PCBs. There's a lot of research that has been done extensively. These things impair development, and they've found associations with problems with attention and memory and learning. And these things are really the statement that was made, that was, this is a cause for serious concern that commonly encountered household and environmental chemicals that we're all using, you know, to clean house and that sort of thing, contribute to developmental disabilities. So there's lots of information on this, but what we don't know is why specific children are affected and not others. Their bodies may actually have more trouble removing those toxins that we're all exposed to on a daily basis, and that leaves them inside the body instead of getting them out, and they end up doing more damage in there. So that's environmental toxins. But what else about the environment? Well, it's diet. You know, what two issues, what we're eating, what the children are eating, and what they're not eating. So what's in our diet and what's not in our diet, as far as children goes, this applies to both ADHD and autism. And what's in our diet that has been shown to be a problem is artificial ingredients and food reactions to certain foods. So I always search for kind of allergic reactions and even sensitivity reactions, which are two different kinds of blood tests, to see if there's anything children are eating that I can prove is a problem. And we remove those from the diet. But also something you can't test for, which is a group of thousands of ingredients that are in our food supply, is artificial dyes and flavors and sweeteners and preservatives. And the Feingold diet came up about 40 years ago, where Dr. Feingold said, you know, the children with attention and behavior problems seem to be sensitive to these artificial ingredients. Removing them from the diet makes their behavior better. And he was really poo-pooed practically off the face of the earth. His colleagues thought he was crazy. And it turns out, when you look at the vast majority of studies since then, that about 80% of kids will improve with attention deficit and behavior problems when you take these things out of the diet. So you have to get really smart and become a great label reader and understand how to find these hidden, sometimes hidden, ingredients in foods and take them out. There's a great study done in the UK about 4 or 5 years ago now that really was the final straw that showed definitely artificial colors and flavors increased hyperactivity in children. So it's kind of a done deal. A newer study in 2010 showed that ADHD was gene-mediated, the sensitivities were gene-mediated, like you inherited that. And it was definitely worse in the kids who kind of had an allergic reaction in their blood. So it's always important to look for that. But then we have to look at what's not in the diet. And I'll tell you that the lack of nutrients is a pervasive problem, not only in the United States, but in many countries in the world, unfortunately, where we're kind of spreading this Western diet across the planet. And it's coined, many of you have heard the term SAD, standard American diet. And that's sad because most of what we're eating is nutrient poor, not nutrient rich. And so we end up being really malnourished even though we're getting heavier. If you look at an autistic child's diet, typically they will eat only white and beige foods. They have texture problems and so forth, and there are French fries, chicken nuggets, and maybe rice or mashed potatoes. There's problems with digestion. Probably their stomachs hurt, and they just don't want to eat anything but bland. eating the raw fruits and vegetables that give them the nutrition that they need for their brain. And there's just lots of research on this. There's lots of research on omega-3 deficiencies, and those nutrients are really important as well in ADHD and autism. And more research that's shown trace mineral deficiencies like zinc and copper and iron, and that was a big study that was presented. So we know that it's what's in the diet and what's not in the diet, and we really have to focus on eliminating the bad stuff and putting more good stuff in. So that's the environment with toxins in the diet. And then the other big area, and this is so important for everybody to understand, is oxidative stress. Basically, all our bodies have oxidative stress all the time because we are breathing oxygen. And when we use oxygen, we use it for energy. And when we make energy to keep all our cells running, to keep breathing, to keep our hearts beating, to keep our brain working, some sort of exhaust is created, you know, damaging particles. But we have to keep breathing oxygen to live, so it's good and bad. Naturally, we're having these free radicals, which are the byproducts of this oxygen reaction. And those can cause damage. They can cause damage to cell membranes, which makes the cells have a hard time talking to each other. Especially in this case, we're talking about the brain cells talking to each other. We want the neurons to work really, really well. We don't want to damage their communication, and that's the cell membrane. The free radicals damage DNA, protein, fats, carbohydrates, enzymes, and we can see the signs of this damage if we do blood tests. We see lipid damage, the fats. We can see that in the blood, and we can see protein damage in the blood. So if you look at autism, there was a couple of great studies, and actually I think there's been about four right now, but there's been several in the last few years that have shown very convincingly that there is both lipid peroxidation, which means damage, and enzyme levels, which are significantly lower, those ones that should help us with oxidative stress. And that's what we see in kids with autism. So there's clear oxidative stress, right? And then in ADHD, several studies that show oxidative damage in kids with ADHD that's significantly higher in both cases than kids without these problems. So it's definitely a sign that something is not going right in the body. So how do you neutralize that oxidative stress? Well, our systems have been built with a beautiful built-in system to neutralize oxidative stress, and that is by the food we eat. What I always say, we were put on the planet with just the right kinds of food, and if we just go back, I always have the kids pretend there's no stores and no cars and nothing to eat unless you go find it out on the land. What do you eat? And that's what you need to eat more of, because fruits and vegetables is where the antioxidants are. So we want to stop the oxidative stress by eating more antioxidants, and that's the best way to get antioxidants. So getting more fruits and vegetables into these children is the most important thing, so that we can neutralize this big problem that they have more than other children, which is oxidative stress. Okay, so we know we have genetics, we have the environment, and we have the oxidative stress. Which of these can we impact? We can't really impact genetics, not at least right now, as far as we know. We don't know how. We can't really impact the amount of toxins that are getting into our body except for drinking purified water, eating organic vegetables. But we can impact the diet, and luckily enough, when we make the right changes in the diet, we can make oxidative stress better. And I think that's really the bottom line, that's why we're seeing in our practice so much success with improving these children's symptoms, is because we really focus on that. So how can we help kids with ADHD and autism? Well, number one, we have a really structured approach to behavior and sleep. Those things are very important. We need to eliminate toxins. I would use only green cleaners, natural green cleaners in your home, and drink only purified water, which is another source of toxins. It's important to get enough omega-3s, so a supplement for that. If they're not eating salmon all the time, they need to take a omega-3 supplement, and eliminate these artificial ingredients completely if you can from the diet and the foods you find your children are sensitive to. Okay? Now, often in autism, gluten and casein need to be eliminated, at least for outline of what I think is missing in most people's plan. Most people that read a lot can learn these things, but what's missing is eating a whole foods diet, because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of nutrients in fruits and vegetables that we are missing if we're not eating them. And you don't know which one is going to help that child's brain. You just have to put them all in there and let them go to work. And because we unfortunately have the most trouble with kids with behavior problems and especially texture and sensitivities that the autistic children have with their digestion, we have a really hard time getting them to eat fruits and vegetables, to actually eat enough. And I would say in the case of children in the toddler to elementary school age, they really should be eating probably 9 or 10 servings of fruits and vegetables because they have so much extra oxidative stress. They should be eating 9 or 10 servings a day. And that, as you can say, if you're a parent, you're kind of rolling your eyes right now because, you know, that just about never happens. So, you know, it's really tough with these kids, and they often gravitate towards the fake foods and the foods that are the worst for them. So how do we get these nutrients into children? You know, number one is discipline. It's not if, it's when. You know, when you eat this, then you may have that. So you want to always put the veggies first. In the South, we call it the no thank you bite. You have to taste everything. You taste one bite and say, no thank you, I don't want any more of that. Fine. You know, then you can go on, but at least they taste it. And as they keep tasting it, their taste will improve. But, you know, let's look at Juice Plus now, because we really need to fill in the gaps. Even when we do the best job we can, we have the best discipline, we still have a hard time getting enough nutrients in not only our children but ourselves. So when I first heard about Juice Plus, it was about 8 years ago, and I, you know, have heard about every natural product because I'm a more holistic physician. I've heard, you know, people know that I'll be open-minded. And there's never any research that's associated with it. And as Cheryl said, what I was really impressed with was when 4 months later, after I heard about it, I finally read the research packet. You know, I was really impressed. Back then, there were only half as many studies as there are today. Today, there are 26 impressive studies published by universities around the world in medical university settings, which is the toughest kind of research to publish. So that's why I was impressed. And then I really thought, you know, even in my own family, we're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. So first we began to take Juice Plus personally, noticed healthy changes in our family, and I began to recommend it to my patients. And so why would you want to do this if you're the parent of a child with one of these conditions? Well, first and foremost, to bridge the gap between what they should be eating and what they're actually eating. And let me just say, I'm talking about children, but I'm really talking about the whole family, because we can all benefit from more fruits and vegetables. To prevent diseases in adults, there's nothing like more fruits and vegetables. And so the other reason is that Juice Plus is just fruits and vegetables. There's really nothing else in it. It's not a vitamin. It's not an herb. It's just fruits and vegetables. So if you can eat fruits and vegetables with the medicine your child's on, then you can eat Juice Plus, because there's nothing else in it, and it's very, very safe. But it's not a substitute for eating as many fruits and vegetables as possible, so that's important to have a good diet, too. Some of the specific research that's been done on Juice Plus that I mentioned, you know, prestigious institutions around the world have done that specifically applies to attention deficit and autism is the research on oxidative stress. There are actually 18 studies that show increased levels of antioxidants in the blood in people who take Juice Plus. So it's actually, when you're eating it, actually getting into your bloodstream, right? And then 11 studies that show Juice Plus reduces oxidative stress. This is a huge thing for ADHD and autism, because this is one of the ways they're different. These children are different, and adults, I would say, too, than kids and adults who don't have these conditions. So here's proof that you are going to improve that. There are no studies that are on Juice Plus helping ADHD or Juice Plus helping autism, but we want to get at actually the cause of that problem, not just what the label is. So it's important to look at, well, what's underneath there? And what's underneath there is oxidative stress. So I would say that beyond a shadow of a doubt, for me in my practice, I think this improved nutrition is a part of the foundation of making kids with ADHD better and kids with autism better, as well as removing the bad stuff from their diet. And when you look at the health of the whole family, you know, most diseases we know of today are actually caused by too much oxidative stress and not enough antioxidants, not enough fruits and vegetables. So when you look at the rest of the research, you'll see Juice Plus not only reduces oxidative stress and decreases that, but protects your DNA, supports a healthy immune system, a healthy cardiovascular system. It makes your skin and your gums more healthy, and many, many, many other positive effects on the body. So what I really love about this is that the whole family can get healthy and get better educated about really how to stay well, stay healthy, and prevent problems like attention deficit and autism getting worse. It's not necessary. And so you can take these tools and move forward and share with others. All this about nutrition really is going to impact kids. And some it impacts a lot, and some it impacts a little, but it's always positive, because fruits and vegetables are not going to hurt anybody. They're only going to help. One of the things I appreciate most about NSA, who makes Juice Plus, is the Children's Health Study, where a child between 4 years old and college age can get their Juice Plus for free when an adult is also taking Juice Plus, that's an adult that's associated with that child. So the whole family can get healthier and save money at the same time, which we're all trying to do right now. So really, in summary, autism and ADHD are really complicated conditions. There's no real simple answer. There's no one, you know, solution that's going to be a cure. But with nutritional and environmental factors being addressed, we can really improve the lives of these children and the symptoms. We really need a lot of larger studies to really look at what exactly is going to help. But fruits and vegetables are so simple, and we know that they're going to improve, that we really need to focus on how do we get more in our kids, and that's where Juice Plus can come in. And I am really excited, Cheryl, I have to tell you, really excited about being able to share tonight, because I see all the parents out there as an army of people that can really change the face of healthcare for children by making healthier choices themselves and sharing that with other people. So I really appreciate the opportunity to share with everyone, and I hope that's been helpful for you guys around the world.
Well, tremendously so, and thank you so much, Dr. Miles. I know that just the fear of that particular problem for parents and people who, you know, we all love our children so much and our grandchildren, and the fear of the just huge numbers that you hear and that you are, you know, are aware. I think it's just so exciting to hear that there is, you know, someone like yourself, there are people who really are spending their life and their time focused on how they're going to make a difference in this area. And I think for all of us, we are living in a time where we really do have to pay attention to all of those things, to, you know, the environmental stress and the oxidative stress and how we can manage that. And certainly in this regard, where our children are concerned, they are, you know, in our future, you know, in all areas. So thank you so much for your input tonight. We loved having you with us, and we loved the information. Thank you again.
Sure.
And we'll say goodnight to everyone as we are just ending our time. But, again, a huge appreciation to Dr. Miles for her interest, her knowledge, and her sharing, and for all of us, just the realization that there is a moral, ethical responsibility, I feel, with the knowledge that we have and the difference that our product can make as far as people in their lives and the quality of their lives and the future of what their lives can be, especially with children.